Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Anthony Heron.
Drew's going to be legit. The guy can play football.
Former NFL defensive lineman Anthony Heron.
That's away from the initial contact, but not the second time. Anthony Heron wrapped him up.
Breaking down the Bears on Fox TV.
Mr. Heron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
College football for the Pac-12 Network.
Heron, the best of the bunch right now.
Anthony Heron with Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Let's talk some football as we do on Thursdays with our guy who's nice enough to come on into the studio and hang out with us, Anthony Heron. He's on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. He of the Pac-12 Network, NBC Sports, Fox 32, and Sirius XM. Always a man after my own heart, wearing free clothing given to him
nonstop
by employers, bowl games, coat drive,
radio,
the one-man coat drive. He is. So what do you make of the story out of Hallis Hall yesterday with take any angle you want. One angle is Mitchell Trubisky somehow needs to be coddled because he can't even hear anything that's vaguely critical or negative. That's one angle.
Another, Hall needs a universal remote.
Yeah, another would be, why is the team that talks about earmuffs and horse blinders pumping in opinions from network television into their building in this way? And also, I would think if Trubisky alleges they don't know who we are, that presumes they do know who they are after telling us they didn't know what their identity was. So where are we?
I take even a slightly different angle on it where I like Surly Mitch. I do. Hmm. I think that the Bears are at a point in their season. He's at a point in his career where this is sort of a crossroads moment for a guy only in his third year, but with all the eyes that were on this team coming into the season, all the eyes that were on him to take that proverbial next step, and that step hasn't been taken. And so the way that the harsh glare of the sports world has been on the Bears and chief amongst those been on Mitch Trubisky, for him to, in a way, start kind of puffing his chest out a little bit. I mean, even just the admission that, in his mind, it almost seemed like, as I was watching the press conference, it was almost just sort of a throwaway comment that he made. That, yeah, I want these TVs off around here. Just in passing, in the midst of answering a question. I don't even think he was making it as this big proclamation. But several answers leading into that, I felt like were him, you know, almost just kind of stiff-arming certain questions that were coming in. One of them, the thing I most noticed was one of the questions about in what ways sort of the Bears and Matt Nagy are trying to help him enhance his confidence or keep his confidence up. So I don't need that. I don't need anybody. I can handle my own confidence, and essentially saying I'm a grown man. I'm not some toddler who needs to be coddled or spoon-fed anything. And we know in the 3 years he's been in Chicago, he has been coddled and he has been spoon-fed certain things. And frankly, for where he was at in his development, it was necessary. And I think he's now at a point where, and I was saying something to Lawrence on Monday, that in the game the other day, where it was another example of, it was more than Mitch, but what I didn't like about Mitch's performance was that they went on the road in the hostile territory in what they knew was going to be a demanding environment against a, you know, quality defense. Yeah. And I felt like Mitch didn't attack the game. And I want to see that. I feel like we need to see that, most notably, most importantly, Mitch and his teammates need to see him attack the game this Sunday. I would rather he threw three interceptions than no touchdowns. I want to see Mitch come out, see if he can take the game over, throw caution to the wind, and in a manner just say, you know, I don't care about the results. I just care about my aggression with the way I try to make plays here on the field. Hmm. His tenor with the media yesterday seemed to indicate to me that he's kind of tired of folks just kind of counting him out and saying he's just this kid who can't get anything done.
You know what this reminds me of, Dan? Remember when we had, it was before Yu Darvish had really grabbed and gotten on a run late July. We had Red Ryan Dempster on.
And Ryan and Dempster said, keep throwing your fastball and see how many home runs you can give up.
See how many home runs you can give up with your fastball. Yeah. That's what this makes me feel like right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, you tell me, and I don't mean this snidely at all. Mm-hmm. I truly want to know, because you've taught me a lot about football over the last 4 or 5 weeks with the Kyle Fuller stuff and everything else. Like, can he get better if he just throws a lot of it off of his shoulders and lets it rip? I mean, can you get better in a game like that? And how does it work? I mean, is it a matter of seeing one go down? Is it a matter of trying this throw and seeing what happens? And if you can, why hasn't he taken that on himself yet?
The best moments in Mitch's career up to this point, not all of them, but some of the best moments in Mitch's career have been when he's played with some freedom to him, where he's played. Like, I think back to his rookie year in a game against the Detroit Lions, where John Fox was still the coach. It was the first time, I think they got down like 2 or 3 scores in the second half on the road against Detroit.
Yeah.
And it was the first time Dow Loggins and John Fox said, all right, I guess we got to let the kid throw the ball if we're going to have a shot at coming back into this game. And it was for me, in watching and evaluating Mitch and watching that rookie year, it was the first time I said, all right, this kid's got something. Like, it was the second half against Detroit where he just came out and he was slinging, man. I mean, he was in Bears, had no receivers at that point, but he lit it up. I think threw for over 200 yards in the second half.
Couple of touchdowns. Inman caught a big one.
I mean, some real dimes too, man. On some deep in routes, some deep out cuts, moving the pocket, extending the play. Now that certainly and obviously hasn't been there consistently throughout his career, but it was a moment where they were several scores down, but he showed NFL talent, making big time NFL throws when there was no pressure and no real deep thought process taking place in the moment. Just him living in the moment, making plays, playing aggressively, because the game was sort of out of hand. He did it also in the second half of the game against the Patriots last year. We've seen him in several occasions. The opener against Green Bay this season, when the whole city came out like, oh, he was supposed to take another step. The quarterback sucks. Mitch didn't suck, man. His teammates sucked in that game against Green Bay. Matt Nagy sucked in that game against Green Bay. I put a thing on Twitter the following day just showing multiple drives in the second half of that opener against Green Bay where Mitch was throwing darts and balls were getting dropped. Charles Leno's picking up penalties. The physical tools are there. And when he plays with freedom and is not thinking, Mitch can perform at a high level in this league. He just needs to get out of his own way. And that's where it goes back to something I said to you guys in the preseason. If Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich can put him in that place consistently, they can get consistent performance from him. But part of that is certainly on him to start a game in that manner. Not to allow the game to start to get away from the Bears, not to have to force his coach to find a way to get him in rhythm, but to start a game with aggression, to start a game on fire, to put his teammates in a position where they say, you know what? Not only do we love that guy, because they love Mitch. I talk to guys at House Hall. They love his personality, his work ethic, all those things. But that's a guy who we can ride with to win us some games, because his teammates may not get much better. But when Mitch is at a crossroads right now, he needs to try to take his destiny into his own hands here.
I know it'll never happen. But in the movie version of this, he pretends his helmet speaker's broken. Coach, I can't hear you. And he just goes. Mm. You know what?
The Rudy soundtrack starts.
Let me
Chariots of Fire.
Out there and let me feel this a little bit. And let me cut the umbilical cord and just be in the huddle with my teammates. It'll never happen.
Right.
But I just, in my little cinematic fantasy world here, it's like, you know what? Ah, enough. Get out of my head. Shut up and let me quarterback a team. Uh-huh. And he gets to the huddle. And Mitch, are you okay? I'm more than okay. Let's go.
And after the 6th touchdown, Khalil Mack on the sideline screaming, who's the wild man now?
Right.
You know, the tears down everybody's face. This is the greatest sight my eyes have ever seen. Like, it's just Rudy.
Ever seen. Now, the thing is, and I'm focused on the Mitch end of it, because part of it to me is the mentality I want to see him attack the game with. I still don't want to see him attempting 50 to 55 passes. That's where Matt Nagy comes in, because Mitch needs to be in attack mode. But his coach still needs to put him in a position where the game plan dictates where Mitch is at right now. Because regardless of how much he's attacking, he's still not a guy who's going to attempt 50 to 60 passes and win a game for the Bears. Now, the Lions defense has been very porous this season. They're better on the back end than they are on the front end. So, sure, you should be in some situations where, to me, maybe the third series of the game, come out with some no huddle, come out with some tempo after you've maybe established some I formation, some run game. You've shown the defense one thing within that scripted first 15. Now you come back and say, all right, Mitch.
Yeah, but you don't get to your first 15 until midway through the third quarter.
That's an issue. That's a problem because right. you haven't run 15 snaps until everyone's
and
leaving the
15.
Field.
Right.
So that presents an issue. But assuming they can sustain a drive or two early on, at some point after you've gotten a couple of drives in, you've shown them one look, then I think you get to where you say, Mitch, let's do this, man. We have an advantage personnel-wise. Now we can put a drive, not a game, but put a drive in your hands to see what we come out, especially now Matt Stafford's playing some of the best football of his career right now, but especially assuming the defense is able to hold up early. The game isn't where you're trying to play from behind or anything like that. So it's up to me. In this version of what I would like to see on Sunday, it's up to Matt Nagy, even if Mitch is coming out dealing and attacking and all this stuff, to still have balance to the way the game is called.
I don't mean to go full Matt Nagy on you here, but did you get a chance to watch the Baltimore-New England game on Sunday? With your 75 jobs, I don't know how often you were able to get just a bit, just pieces of it. One of the things that got brought up, and it's spitting around Twitter a little bit here, is that Chris Collinsworth brought up that numbers would tell you that there's benefit to running play action even if you haven't run the ball a whole heck of a lot. Mm-hmm. I wondered, as a rush guy, you know, who you're depending on to kind of bite that and, you know, commit to one thing or the other, does that jive with you? Does that make sense in your own mind? And if that is true, if you can run play action and have the same kind of benefits on your offense for faking that thing to the running back, why is it the Bears don't seem to think that way? Do they seem to think that way? Is a shotgun an issue here? I mean, where do you stand on how play action can be effective for them?
And what you added there at the end is a key element to the question, because the type of shotgun is a big part of where the Bears, I think, struggle at times, because when their play action comes from the gun, then it affects the defense in a different manner. You know, you have your offensive line. If you're faking more of a zone scheme from the shotgun as opposed to faking a downhill run play with more of a gap scheme, then you're not hiding the ball in the same way. You don't have defenders getting busted in the chops by the offensive line where it doesn't sap the pass rush in the same manner. Hmm. So protection may not be quite as sound from a what we would term more of a soft play action from shotgun than a hard play action from under center, where the QB's turning his back to the defense and you get the pass rush really thinking it's a run play.
I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't thought of the difference. If you run a zone scheme, mm-hmm. just the way the defense deals with that initial impact yeah. is fundamentally different, and of course that's going to be a different reaction to it.
I mean, on Madden, I can't get a play action on shotgun to work for anything.
Well, you end up down the middle of the offensive lineman as a pass rusher when you get more of that hard play action, but then also the second level of your defense, because not only does shotgun in theory end up sapping the pass rush of the opponent because you're allowing them up front to think it's run for a moment, but also the throwing windows that get open. Now, you can open up throwing windows with either version, whether it's from the gun or from under center, but under center with that hard play action where the quarterback is forced to turn his back to the defense, now you're more likely to suck in the linebackers themselves, open up those intermediate throwing windows.
But you're asking the quarterback to see it and to diagnose it Precisely. Faster because he's turning his head around.
Precisely. Now that's where the play action from gun, where you show that mesh point, it may not be as effective for where the Bears are at offensively because, one, they haven't seen Mitch Trubisky really threaten defenses with his legs from a called QB run standpoint as much this year. So they're not honoring that in the same fashion. And they're not necessarily confident that Mitch can actually read his own coverage and carve them up if they do bite on the run anyway. So they're not as concerned with either portion of that. But play action from the gun, it can be very effective because it will still open up throwing windows, especially when you can force defenders to move laterally with the back and with the offensive line. You get that elephants on parade sort of effect where all those really big, heavy guys are moving in unison in the same direction. So throwing windows can be open to that wider side of the field.
Now that's got to be part of our musical.
Oh, God, absolutely.
Maybe, are you kidding? Maybe open the second act with elephants on parade?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
Yep. We got a musical act? Did I miss something?
Yeah, we are.
We whiteboard that for you in the break. It's fairly complicated.
We don't know exactly how it happened, but we started out the show by making the 2019 Bears into a full-blown Broadway musical.
Like when Mitch yesterday was talking about turning the televisions off, and he says, you know, I just people don't know who we are. All I can hear in my head is him going, we don't know who we are. 2, 3, 4, and then the whole retinue. Agnew comes up on stage and they're telling you who that. Yeah, it's just, it felt like a musical to me, which I would watch rather than watching for losses.
Anthony Herron is with us on the Bernstein and McKnight show. You can hear Anthony with Olin Krutz when they take over in the studio for the post game.
Yeah.
And that's 5:15 on Sunday until Sunday Night Football begins at 6:30. They are sort of the cherry on top of our broadcasting day. That's going to be at Coombs Corner Sports Grill Sunday, the sports book and Ameristar pregame show. Hub Arkish, Patrick Manley, Olin Krutz from 9 a.m. to kick off then the 2-hour post with Hub and Manley and Big Cat Williams, brought to you by Miller Lite. Olin and Anthony, if you get to your radio a little bit later on in the afternoon, have also been terrific. Also, I want to mention this. Mully and Haw tomorrow morning are going to be at Duncan, because it's a Duncan Bears Friday. So if you stop by the location at 1519 West Madison from 5 to 9 a.m., you can see the guys broadcast live and win score prizes. So start your Duncan Bears Friday with 670 The Score and Duncan. Chicago runs on Duncan.
So all the play action stuff we were talking about just now and getting those elephants on parade, the big bodies moving one way, all it makes me think about is how easy it would be, or theoretically easy it would be, to have, you know, a inline tight end kind of guy who could also move just a little bit, maybe bring down a football.
Yeah.
Who's part of that parade, right? It's all moving along, all these big bodies and the linebackers trying to figure out who the hell's going where. Mm. And that guy just kind of stops blocking his dude and drops, about 5-6 yards, does that drag thing in the same direction the quarterback's going, over the top. And then you got, 15, 19, 22 yards, something like that. If only you had a bleeping tight end.
You got to be bleeping me.
This offense doesn't. I am convinced. I've read a lot smarter people than me and heard guys like you and Olin talk. The lack of a tight end in this offense is crippling.
It hurts quite a bit, man, because they can ask that position to do so much, and they find themselves sort of piecemealing the position together with three different individuals, most who, amongst them are not very effective. J.P. Holtz has carved out this niche as more of a fullback, but the H-back position or the U tight end, that's one thing that you could be asking him to do as well if you had an individual capable of that who was also capable of being an inline blocker and also capable of being an effective pass receiver in the intermediate to deeper portions of the route tree. They haven't gotten that from Trey Burton, who Matt Nagy admitted the other day or yesterday or whatever it was that, he's not 100%. Yeah. We can all see that. He's not as sudden. He's not moving that well, and he's not making any plays. And then you have Adam Shaheen, who is Adam Shaheen, unfortunately, as opposed to a more effective football player.
Yes, that is unfortunate.
the position, you can get a lot more out of it than what the Bears are getting, but with this adjustment we're seeing to the Bears' offense, if you say, hey, all right, Cornelius Lucas, what we're not getting from the tight end as a pass receiver, we're just going to keep throwing you on the field and try to start mashing these guys. You get you out there, you get Holtz out there, we'll bust some dudes in the chops, and you can this sort of, newer version, this amalgam of what the Bears offense was and what it is and what it needs to be. I like the fact that Matt Nagy, I feel like it's a couple of games in a row where the management of the offense is closer to the reality of where the Bears are at offensively as opposed to what he dreams it can be or will be.
And concept.
Now that he's recognizing that, I think it could lead it. Maybe should lead to better things until it gets to the point where they can run offense in the way that he'd like to. He just doesn't have personnel who's doing that other version very well.
That's Anthony Herron. We've got more with him coming up. Got to talk about the Bears defense as well. All sorts of stuff. You always learn a lot about football on Thursdays starting at 11 o'clock. Got another segment coming your way. And we're giving away Bulls tickets soon. You got to be listening for that chance to win right here on Bernstein and McKnight on The Score. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program is presented by Kia. Go to chicagowolves.com/youth hockey to learn how to get your team on the ice to play during intermission of a Wolves game. They are winners. They are the Wolves. The Bears are not winners. They are 3-5. And that means
they're not the Wolves.
They have lost more games than they've won. They have lost 4 in a row. Things are looking ugly. And I've asked this question of our Bears experts. I will ask it of you because of your knowledge of defensive line play. Is it facile to say Akeem Hicks matters this much and not having him has made that much of a difference?
It makes perfect sense. It's when Akeem Hicks first went down with the injury, and I'm just kudos for using the word facile, by the way. I was going to blow by and I said, you know what?
Let me stop turning around.
It's a quality word. Yeah,
it makes me feel good.
It's certainly worthy of note. Thank you for using that. It sort of made this whole segment for me. But Akeem Hicks, I've used similar terms before. What you lose from him tangibly is a huge deal because he's one of the better interior defensive linemen in the NFL. But just his life force on the field doesn't only affect the Bears' defense. His life force exudes this confidence, this bravado that just emanates through everyone else, and it affects the back end of the defense and their playmaking ability. It affects the offense with the way that they do get into seemingly that more aggressive sort of attack mode in a way that Khalil Mack doesn't. Because, as I've said before, there are things that just watching him by example you can attempt to follow. You just won't be physically capable of doing so, but he doesn't necessarily exude that sort of outward demeanor that galvanizes those around him. And that's the difference between where Khalil Mack is a better football player than Akeem Hicks, but Akeem Hicks has proven to be a more vital loss on the field, in the locker room, for both sides of the ball than Khalil Mack would be.
His chi, then, right? Was that the traditional Chinese idea of vital energy or the flow of something that affects outwardly?
Right. And I mean, you could use the word swag. I try to avoid because it's so overused in the lexicon today. Swag and dynamic. There's two words I try to avoid because I feel like I've got a broad enough grasp of the English language, where I don't need to use that word that people use dozens of times every day. But yes, chi is a good one. I'm going to probably use that on the air this weekend.
With four losses in a row, I'm kind of left to check receipts on the Bears and the process, as it were. We went through the tight ends in the last segment, and things didn't come up real good in the whole checkbook. So now I'm left with another one, and it's Leonard Floyd. Two sacks in the Green Bay game to open the season. One sack against the Eagles this last week, and he went a little wild in between. It kind of felt like the first half of his season last year.
Wild as in like running from playmaking?
A little bit of that. Regardless, you don't have Hicks, and this is the reason I bring it up. Hicks matters, and I think rush players who aren't at the level of Khalil Mack, they are kind of dependent on other people. That's what it seems to me. Check me if I'm wrong, but where is Leonard Floyd at in terms of his development? I know they exercised the fifth-year option, so it's incredibly likely he's here. But how much of a letdown has his first eight games been?
He's worthy of being here. He's playing good football. He's not playing what you would hope of a top-10 pick football. He's not playing Pro Bowl caliber football. He's not playing, you know, we're going to have to pay that guy a bunch of money level football. But opposite from Khalil Mack, and this was what, you know, Khalil Mack's signing had a number of effects on the Bears organization, on the perception of their window and how the city was looking at this team. A lot of very positive effects that played out throughout last season. One of the smaller effects is that it did take the onus off of Leonard Floyd that had been there through the first couple of years of his career to turn into a force off the edge. That's not what he was in college. I said it as soon as they drafted the guy. The dude wasn't a pass rusher in college. You need edge rush. You draft this guy. You're probably not going to get it. He's a Swiss Army knife. He's a talented athlete. He's a quality football player. He works his tail off. And we've seen that. Like, he's fine against the run. He's very good in pass coverage. And on occasion, you have a game where you watch him and say, oh, yeah, that's a really good edge rusher. It's not consistently there because there's more to the craft of rushing the quarterback off the edge than just being tall and fast. And he was never that guy in college, and he's not that guy at the professional level that you can just count on and say, hey, Leonard, go sick him off the edge 30 times during a game. It's just not what he does.
Question about him, though. Mm-hmm. I noticed this once per game. Once per game, there will be a pass play behind Leonard Floyd's zone of coverage where he comes incredibly close to making a spectacular athletic play. Is that because somebody's open and he's just athletic and long and good enough to make it look like he almost made the play, but he is getting fooled or he is biting on something enough to make the quarterback read that guy as open? Or is he recognizing it just not quite quickly enough? I mean, you see 94 leaping through the air trying to get a hand on something. And I'm wondering, is that a good thing or a bad thing that I keep seeing that?
Leonard Floyd doesn't seem to, where, you know, certain guys have just a real knack for playmaking. That just splash plays almost seem to find them as opposed to them consistently finding the splash play. And for a guy who is a good football player, who will continue to be a Bear, I hope he is for a long time, as long as he's got a great player on the opposing side, because it doesn't look like he's going to be a great player. But in that example you're talking about in pass coverage, where he's doing his job, I'm sure he's grading out at a very high level in all his coverage responsibilities. Just for whatever reason, that extra little morsel of spidey sense that you need to be yep. right there in the spot to not only be near the tip or near the interception, but as a great athlete to just know, hey, here's where I need to be to actually make the interception or make that pass deflection. Leonard Floyd is one of those guys who I was one of those guys, just not nearly the athlete Leonard Floyd is, where I was always going to grade out at a really high level. I just didn't necessarily, whether it was not wanting to take that key risk that real playmakers are willing to make and they get there, but there's something where certain guys just don't have that spidey sense, that innate sort of knack for when the moment is that they can take that risk and truly make a splash play.
Baseball scouts talk about it too, and they talk about fielders. They always say, can you complete a play at the edge of your range? That sometimes, like a guy who's at a full-on sprint mm-hmm. to chase down a fly ball, there's a lot of guys that can get there. But then to break it down and have the fine motor skill to complete the play at the very end, like Jason Hayward can do, like some elite fielders can do that. I guess that's what you're talking about. Where Urlacher, you know, Brian Urlacher had that combination yeah. of off-the-charts athleticism and the wherewithal to finish what he was supposed to do at that point. That's an immediate Hall of Famer, right? That's what you're talking about.
Right, precisely. And I mean, to a similar point like I was making about Mitch in the first half of our discussion here, where to get yourself in the mental mind frame where you're willing to perhaps go beyond the X's and O's of the design of a player, of the design of a defensive scheme. And I mean, like Akeem Hicks, if you're just looking at just the fundamentals of a three technique or of a one technique of interior defensive line play, he's not always stellar with his hand placement or his pad level. Now, he's a giant man and he's, you know, it's just hard to move him off the ball. But when you're just like, I wouldn't necessarily put him on for clinic tape when I'm teaching defensive line play, because some of those things are just out of whack. But because he's an exceptional athlete and because of this life force, this exuberance, and just how tenacious he is on the field, and he is one of those guys with that knack for playmaking, especially in the key moments in a game, then he is one of the best in the business, despite not necessarily doing it in the way that always would sort of, you know, traditionally grade out at a high level for what you want the technique of the position to deploy.
I like this question from the text line, 574 texted in. I'll give you a hint as to where we're going here so we don't just completely come over the top on it. Mm-hmm. Bears draft picks, that's where we're headed.
Thank you.
Is there one player on this Bears roster that is playing at the level of where the Bears drafted him? Mm. It's a little subjective, mm-hmm. you know, because yeah. you get assigned this, that, or the other to, you know, tiers of first-round pick. I mean, I would say that the top 8, top 12 in a given draft have this right. set of expectations, and maybe in some, that next tier, the expectations lower quite a bit, given on, you know, what the class looks like. But what would you say to whether or not there are players playing at the level of where they drafted them?
That's a really good question.
I liked it, yeah, yeah. I liked it.
I'll say this, that I'm trying to think. Roquan Smith is probably the only Ryan Pace draft pick, the only Ryan Pace first round pick that I haven't had an issue with, that I haven't immediately said that feels like a project or like the player was overdrafted. And Roquan, up to a certain point, really up until he missed the game for the, you know, the sort of unknown off-field issues that were there between his rookie season and the early phase of this year, was playing like a guy drafted to his status. Mm-hmm. He's really the one that sticks out to me. And it felt like 2 games ago, he was maybe starting to get back to being that guy. And then last week, he had a lot of tackles in the game, but they didn't seem that impactful in last week's game. So if I'm willing to assume Roquan Smith will get back to the level of play where it felt like he certainly was last year and where he was through the first month or so of this season, if he gets back to that guy, then I have every confidence Roquan Smith will continue to be, because he's, as I said when they drafted him, I said, Roquan Smith face there in Dallas as soon as he walked off the stage. You're the first project that Ryan Pace hasn't drafted, and he's played like that when he's been on the field.
If we're being really honest in answering that question completely objectively,
I think we should.
Even considering our disappointment this year, like Eddie Jackson was a 4th-round pick.
Yes, right? That's one.
Right.
Tariq Cohen was a 4th-round pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you can say what you want about
this has been such a bad year.
It's been a bad year for him, but you have to say that's value for a fourth round pick, right?
Probably Cody White.
Yeah, went to a Pro Bowl last year. Yeah, Cody was second round. Yeah, right?
Late second too. If I recall.
Javon Wims was a seventh, and he's
rostered,
active NFL roster.
The mid to late round picks are where shined as we look at this season. Maybe a strong, but Ryan Pace has been much better in the mid to late rounds drafting than he has very early in the draft, where he's missed on some guys or even guys who were on the team, like a Leonard Floyd playing quality football. He's not playing top 10 pick type football, which you really want from a guy drafted at that stage in the draft. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys there in the second round, mid round and beyond. I mean, David Montgomery, I think, is having a quality rookie season for what he's dealing with, what he has to work with so far for a guy drafted in the third-ish round. So, I mean, I think in that phase of the draft, he's done well. It's the early picks, especially specifically the first round picks, that stand out to everyone, and that's where my brain went with that question.
It sounds like you feel good about the Bears this week.
You know what? I don't know that I feel good about the Bears. I'm just so riveted by what's happening right now, specifically with the Bears, like we were discussing with golf a moment ago, in the city of Chicago and the sports scene. It's just there's a lot of drama, there's a lot of angst, and the human element of it, the human interest part of it, of how will people respond. I'm not as invested in how the Bulls respond, but specifically with the Bears right now, man, seeing how Mitch tries to come back from this, how Matt Nagy, and he stands at the podium every day trying to address things with the media. I wish he'd maybe dial it back a bit with the things he addresses publicly about some of his players, specifically his quarterback. But the human interest part of whether or not these guys who are going through these struggles right now, who a guy like Mitch, who's sort of at the crossroads of a young career, how will they respond in this moment? I'm riveted by how that's going to look on the field Sunday in the midst of this losing skid, where the city is just up in arms about it. And you got those whatever 45 guys who are going to take the field trying to say, you know what, we think we still got something and the world's against us and we're flipping TVs off and all that stuff. If they come out, it's still only Detroit, but it's just one step, one extra data point about what the Bears may still be able to become this year. So I'm riveted by that. I don't know that I necessarily think it's going to come to fruition, but I'm going to be locked in to watch it, man, because it really, really intrigues me.
Anthony, thank you, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.